Okay, and welcome to Health on the Hill. This is the inaugural show of Health on the Hill. We are four Northern Medical Program students, and this show is a project for a course of ours. The course is called Doctor, Patient, and Society. And
what the course is, essentially, it looks at the interactions between physicians and patients, the interaction between physicians and the public, and the interactions between the public and the profession of being a physician overall. So, for example, it may look at how do you approach a patient in dealing with whether or not they want immunizations for their children. It may look at the delivery of mental health care to Aboriginals. It may look at delivery of mental health care to people in the downtown east side of Vancouver.
What the show is not is a forum for medical advice. We're legally bound not to give medical advice by the CRTC and by the College of Physicians and Surgeons in this capacity. So we will not be giving medical advice on this show.
Obviously, we're also bound by our own ethical standards of quite simply being second year medical students. So that's that. Again, you're listening to CFIR 88.7 FM, 94.7 cable in Prince George, and live streaming on CFIR.ca. Now, we're going to tell you a little bit more about the course that we're doing this project for. It's called Doctor, Patient, and Society, and basically it's the part of our medical curriculum that is not science or clinical based. We learn lots and lots about physiology, anatomy, the body, science, etc. This show is about all the other parts of medicine, societal, cultural.
To give you a great example of what kind of topics it covers, we already mentioned vaccination, but the topic for today's lecture that we had just before we came to this to record this show was how is the healthcare system set up? Where does our money go? How much is spent on administration? How much is spent on physicians? How did our healthcare system come to be? So we talked about Tommy Douglas, who was the founder of the modern healthcare in Canada. It started in Saskatchewan in 1947, and it evolved from there. So we're taught about how that happened, and we're taught about the disparities that exist between different public health systems, different public delivery of healthcare in places like Canada, New Zealand, England, and then as well as the delivery methods in the United States. So that's just an example of something we covered today.
In order to have a proper discussion, we can also have a discussion with you, the public. So we can be contacted at an email address, and it's hoth@umbc.ca. So if you want to pass on some feedback or any topics that you want us to discuss, that'd be great.
Any feedback of any kind is much appreciated. Okay, welcome back to Health on the Hill. I think what we're going to do now is we're just going to introduce ourselves. So first off, I'm Simon. I'm originally from Prince George, and I'm in the second year medical program. Actually, we're all in the second year of the Northern Medical Program.
So my name's Gil. I'm originally from Victoria, and I did high school here in Prince George, and I'm really happy to be back here after 6 years away to be pursuing my medical degree.
I'm Jamie. I'm originally from Fort St. John. I moved here 6 years ago with my family, and I'm just pleased to be in the program right now.
And I'm Chris. I'm originally from Terrace, and I did my undergrad here at UMBC, and I came back to do my medical degree as well.
Okay. I forgot to mention that I'm a fan of Liverpool FC. Okay. Now, next we'd like to talk a little bit about the NMP, the structure of it, the history of it, anything about it. So a lot of people in Prince George know that Prince George has a medical school, but that's not, they don't know too much more than that. So Chris, do you want to talk a little bit about the history of the NMP first?
Well, from what I know, it was a very community-led endeavor. The Prince George and the surrounding communities really felt that there needed to be a way to either train or attract doctors to the north and to keep them here. And I guess the end result, after a lot of pushing, was the Northern Medical Program.
So it was the Northern Medical Program that was announced as one of the initiatives that they would be pursuing after the 1997 protests that that really brought attention to the lack of healthcare in the North and the lack of healthcare in Prince George in particular. So the Northern Medical Program was one of the key things that was promised at the time and that has been delivered. It is now entering, it just accepted recently its sixth class of 32 students and has so far already graduated two classes who now have gone on to residency, many in rural locations throughout Canada and some actually here in Prince George.
Just a point of clarity on the Northern Medical Program too. Students in the Northern Medical Program are not UMBC students. They are UBC medical students, and they are attending. Their training is at UMBC in Prince George, but they are still UBC medical students, and that has a lot to do with the delivery of the education, which Jamie's going to talk about.
The delivery of education is typically most of the lectures are video. Cast from Vancouver. We sit in a normal lecture theater and we receive most of our classes through a video screen, and we can interact with the people within Vancouver as well as on the island in the island medical program.
And there's obvious benefits to being in the North. I think like all four of us have chosen to go to school here in the North, and let's talk about some of those benefits. I mean, for me, it comes down to a pace of life issue. It's a lot easier to go to school in Prince George than it is at UBC.
I think that's the same for a lot of us. I mean, I know I chose UNBC originally for my undergrad, because I knew the area would better suit me and the things that I like to do.
The same with me. Having a young family, I was interested in quality of life and not living in a big center. I wanted to raise my family in a small town and have that small town sort of feeling. Right?
The biggest thing that attracted me here to Prince George, having lived here before, is I knew how much people love the outdoors. I knew how much people really cared about their community. And the kind of people that were here were very friendly, very outgoing, very supportive of people. And I didn't feel that I had that when I did my undergrad in a large city. And so I really wanted to come back to a small town, and so the only two choices were Victoria or Prince George, and Prince George has by far a more supportive and enjoyable lifestyle, in my opinion.
Now, one thing that Gil had mentioned earlier actually was just regarding one of the mandates of the NMP was to both recruit and retain physicians to work in not just Prince George, but all of Northern BC, all of rural BC, actually, all of rural Canada, actually. So do we think that the NMP will be successful at that, and how will they quantify that?
I think that it will. I mean, in my opinion, that the people that are attracted to a program in an area like this are those that, like we've said already, are attracted to the lifestyle. And I think they'll continue to pursue that kind of lifestyle, and that will lead them to rural areas rather than large metropolitan centers.
I'm always amazed by a lot of the classmates, how busy they are, and how they all seem to find, at the same time, they all seem to find time to go outside and enjoy the outdoors. There's so much outdoors around here that it would be easy to sink yourself into the books and study in the evening, and then on the weekends spend time studying or just relaxing, doing whatever. But instead, the way the people in this class up here choose to relax is by going outdoors, being physically active, going biking, going hiking, even going over to the Rockies to go for incredibly long runs. It always impresses me how much the people here are suited for being here and would not fit well in a large city. And in that sense, I think the NMP's selection process has been very successful in choosing the right kind of person.
So that selection process, let's talk a little bit how that selection process works. So we apply directly to UBC Medical School.
And we go through the initial application process. And basically that's where the first cut happens. Once people, there's, I think usually typically in the last couple of years, there's been about 1,800 applicants. And that first cut, it's usually knocked down to about 600 and some applicants. And from there, they get offered an interview. And the interview format is typically, it's changed just in the last couple of years. So Chris, you want to talk about the interview format now?
Sure. They went from a panel of three that the student would sit in front of and basically answer questions and just...
Pretty much the interview everyone thinks it happens.
Yeah, what you think of when you think of an interview. And it's recently changed to something called a multiple mini interview that's comprised of a number of small stations, each with an individual question. And it's a very much more structured way of running the interview system.
I believe the origin of the multiple mini interview is from Harvard, and I think... No?
It's actually from McMaster.
It's actually from McMaster. Hold that thought. But it appears to be becoming the standard of medical interviews in Canada, I think.
It was adopted by UBC 2 years ago. At the same time, it was adopted by the U of A. The University of Calgary has been doing it for several years now. The University of Saskatchewan, again, has also recently adopted it. And I believe the University of Manitoba as well. So that's all the Western Canadian medical schools have adopted it within the last 5 to 10 years.
And supposedly, it's supposed to give a more objective selection criteria to selecting people instead of having the taking out some of that personal I know you so you should get in kind of aspect of medical school, right?
So something might happen. So someone, for example, someone arrives at a station, there'd be upwards of 10 stations, and they may walk into the room and there could be a question that they read that has to do with a scenario. So the scenario would be something like, you come into a room and there's a person, and then how do you deal with that person? And so they're judging your ability to interact with people and your ability to communicate effectively with people, because to get through the first screening process in medicine, you have to have good grades. You have to be able to learn the material. And if you can learn the material, you can do well in the academic side of medical school. But once you're through medical school, the biggest part of being a doctor is being able to interact with people, being able to empathize with people, being able to really show empathy towards them, and that's what they're trying to judge in a lot of the multiple mini interviews.
Yeah, I applied 2 times to UBC, so I did the last of the panel interviews and the first of the multiple mini interviews, so I saw both close up, and it was a completely different process.
Yeah. You know, how did you compare the two? Did you enjoy like the second method, the MMI, compared to the first one more? Or?
I don't know. To be perfectly honest with you, I think I actually preferred the panel interview first, because you know you're in the room with three people for 1 hour, and you can't really fake it for 1 hour. You can keep bringing up points that you've said before and kind of bring everything together at the end. Whereas I felt during the multiple mini interviews that it was just one quick encounter after the other, and I had no time to kind of catch my breath and really understand what was going on in the process. But you know what, I got in, so I don't know what to say.
Yeah, whereas I felt, I didn't actually do the panel interview, but I felt with the multiple mini interview that I had almost more than one chance to make a good impression. If I did make a bad impression, or what I felt was a bad impression with one of the interviewers, I had more opportunities to express my point of view.
That's really the thing. In the multiple mini interview, you can completely bomb one of the interviews, and there's still 8 or 9 more that you can do a really good job and still get in.
All right. We actually have an interview now. We have an interview with Dr. Jeff Payne. Dr. Jeff Payne is the Assistant Dean of the Northern Medical Program here in Prince George. Okay. Dr. Payne, welcome to Health on the Hill. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Okay. What is your position here at the NMP?
Currently, I am the Assistant Dean for the Northern Medical Program, which I kind of oversee all 4 years of the program.
Okay. How long have you been here at the NMP?
I've been here since the beginning in 2004. I was the first faculty hire, and so I've kind of seen the program evolve since the beginning.
All right. How have you seen the program change in the time you've been here?
Well, I've seen the program change in, of course, the number of students that we have. We've got 6 years of the program now in terms of student numbers. I've seen innovations in new programs. We now have the integrated clerkship programs that started last year. And basically, the kind of coming along of Prince George Regional Hospital, not having seen medical students before and having them infiltrate into the program and starting in the third year of the program, it's been very good. So we've seen a number of different things.
For those that don't know, can you describe what the integrated clerkship is?
Well, the integrated clerkship, typically when people think about medical school and medical students in their clinical years, they think about the core rotation, so spending time doing a block of surgery or a block of pediatrics or things like that. And what the integrated clerkships are different in terms of how they run is that a student will basically spend an entire year in a community, but they are not constrained to sort of weeks of clerkship. So you don't have the 4 weeks of this or the 4 weeks of that. You basically see patients as they come through the doors at the hospital. And what this really does is it kind of mirrors real kind of healthcare, is how you would see somebody. So that's the differences between the two.
And is that done here in Prince George?
It's not done in Prince George, but it's done in our two sites in Terrace and in Fort St. John. Terrace is starting its second year, and Fort St. John is starting its first year of its program.
Okay. So this is the fifth year of the NMP, is that correct?
Yeah, we have our actually sixth.
Okay. What do you think has been the impact of the program on Prince George and the North?
Well, I think first and foremost, the program has given a lot of pride to the community. This program came about due to a sort of a community groundswell, so they were very excited to get this program, and they've continued to support the program. So that has been, you know, one thing. What was the question again?
Just the general impact of the program on Prince George. I mean, you can address any part of that. Like a follow-up question, I guess, would be, has it been an effective recruiting tool for physicians and clinical researchers here in the North as well?
I think it's been a very effective recruiting tool for physicians. What I've noticed is that we've been able to fill some of the specialties even before we've graduated classes. So we now have, you know, a neurologist in Prince George. We have two gastroenterologists, new psychiatry people coming through. So getting the program out there has allowed those physicians to contact us and want to come to practice in the northern region. And I think they want to come here because they want to practice that type of medicine, but they also want to be a part of the medical school. So we've been able to see, at least myself personally, have seen a number of recruits come through to want to be here in Prince George and surrounding region. So it's been very good.
That's great. So what are some of the challenges you see for recruiting students to the North?
Well, I think the first thing is getting the message out of what the program is all about. I mean, all students start at University of British Columbia, and you are UBC students. But I think getting the kind of idea of what the mission of the Northern Medical Program is, and what we want to do is to graduate physicians that will eventually end up practicing, hopefully, in rural areas of British Columbia, but we'd be very happy with just rural areas of Canada. That is the very underserved kind of areas in terms of people getting access to health care. So if we can graduate physicians that will end up practicing in those regions, I think that's, you know, that's the mission. So we want to be able to get that kind of idea out there to the students that want to be a part of our program. And so making sure that message is heard has been, I wouldn't say a challenge, but it's certainly important to get that out there.
When you're looking at a new round of applicants, what kind of things would suggest to you they'd be suitable for the NMP?
Well, I mean, I don't want to stereotype anybody that would want to come or to be part of the Northern Medical Program and say that you have to have a certain set of skills, that kind of thing. But we want people to have an understanding of what it's like to come to a rural region, have some sort of rural background, some sort of independence. I mean, we want students that are basically outgoing, independent, rural kind of slanted individuals. But that's not to say that if you knew nothing but downtown Vancouver that you couldn't come and be successful in the Northern Medical Program. And we've had students that have fit that kind of criteria that have gone on to do quite well. And so they're almost like, additional people that don't understand what it's like to grow up in a rural region, but now have come to like it and trained here and they want to come back. So that's sort of a bonus.
So we talked about recruiting physicians. What about for graduates? Have you got something in place, or do you plan on measuring the retention in rural communities?
Well, I know that the Northern Medical Program here, we're following where our students are going. We've had two graduating classes, so we've kind of got a sense of where their careers are going. And in July of this year, basically our first set of graduates will be ready to go into family medicine. They will finish their residency program. So we're kind of following that to see where they end up. We're also working with Northern Health to kind of make sure that they're continuing to follow up with our graduates if they want them to come back to not just the Prince George area, but in terms of the Northern Health kind of catchment. So there are programs in place to make sure that we continue to keep tabs on our graduates.
Do you foresee it being a successful recruiting tool, I guess? Or
with the program itself?
With students staying, do you think students will stay or return?
I would hope so. I mean, the first round of graduates, we had 8 out of 23 start their residency programs in Prince George. But when we looked at our where these students were going after graduation, we found that if they weren't in Northern British Columbia, they were also doing rural programs across the country. So we've seen that, you know, their rural training has rubbed off on them, so to speak. And, you know, talking to them, you know, via email and things like that, they do want to come back to the region or stay in a rural practice. So, you know, we won't really get a sense of success probably for another 6 to 8 years in terms of we can really gauge where our students are practicing. But all indications point to that, you know, we're on the right track.
Okay, so staying with students just for the time being, how do expectations differ between undergraduate university students and medical students?
I mean, it is a very big distinction because, you know, most of the students coming into the program are coming right out of an undergrad program. And the first 2 years of the program can look a little bit like undergrad, still going to class and things like that. But what they have to realize is that they're in a professional program. Our students sign educational license with the College of Physicians, and this is important for them to feel like, you know, they are part of a professional program now, so they need to not necessarily change anything about how they conduct themselves, but they have to just be cognizant that it's not undergrad anymore.
What are some specific examples of things that students may have to change or do differently upon entry to the medical profession?
Well, I think you have to recognize that you are sort of carrying more than just yourself in terms of being out there. When you were an undergrad student, you were basically going to class and taking your tests, you know, for yourself. But when you're moving into the medical profession, what you have to recognize is that you're carrying a banner for your fellow classmates, for the Northern Medical Program, and for the hospital and for physicians in general. Society, you know, you're taking over a very important place in society, you know, in terms of people's health care. And there's a lot of expectations put on the community, on students, you know, so, and as they're going to move in to become physicians. So you have to kind of keep all those factors in place.
So overall, would you say that you are impressed with the level of professionalism in students both in the NMP and in UBC medicine in general?
On a whole, yes, very, very impressed. I think, you know, it's hard coming in because one of the things that you don't ever take a class in is how to be a professional. So I think everybody comes in with a different benchmark of where they currently at. We certainly like to talk to students about where they need to be, and everybody's coming along, but, you know, for the most part, everybody's very professional.
Okay, we talked a little bit earlier in the show about how the education is delivered to the students here via video conference, but I just wanted to ask you, Dr. Payne, how does the video conference technology add to or detract from the educational experience for a Northern Medical Program student?
Well, I think doing the sort of the add to bits, what video conference allows students is access to a more of a wide variety of programs in terms of faculty and things like that. You don't have to be constrained with somebody that's on site. So the video conference does that, add the, those dimensions. One of the things that it's also done for us is allow us to branch out to more than just Prince George area. We having those sites that I talked about earlier in terms of the clerkship in Terrace and Fort St. John has allowed us to connect with not just the students in those regions, but also the physicians. So the video conference will enhance, you know, the kind of learning interactions all around. In terms of the what would be a detraction or a challenge, well, you don't have a live individual in front of you when you're getting your teaching, so that can certainly maybe take away, or you don't feel like you need to pay as attention. It might be harder to pick things up because you don't have that sort of that interaction. What I've found in talking to students over the sort of the life of the program so far is that hasn't been too much of a problem in terms of students today, very electronic iPod culture, so most people don't really distinguish between a warm body anymore than a video conference, so the knowledge seems to come through. We've also spent a lot of time looking at the sort of academic success of our students, whether or not the information was coming through via video conference and whether or not it was coming through while having a live lecture. And what we've found is that it does not matter which way you get the information, the sort of the academic success is equal. So that's shown that our program via video conferences are working.
Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you think the public should know about the program?
No, I think that, you know, the questions have kind of covered off all the bases. Just to know that, you know, the program has been very successful so far, and we will continue to hopefully be an active part of the community for years to come.
All right. We thank you very much for your time. We know you're busy, so thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Okay, welcome back to Health on the Hill. Thank you to Dr. Jeff Payne for that interview. You're listening to CFIR 88.7 in Prince George, 94.7 cable, and live streaming at CFIR.ca. A few words about the show.
So we already talked a lot about why we're doing the show and the course it's associated with, but another reason we wanted to do a show like this was we've always been told by a lot of our professors that you will learn the most about yourselves and the others and other people around you when you push yourself outside of your comfort zone. And so that's one of the reasons we wanted to do this. None of us have ever done radio, in case you can't tell. And so we wanted to do something where we were pushing ourselves, where we'd learn a lot about ourselves, where we'd learn a lot about our friends, but also where we could inform the public, where we could teach people about how we learn, what we're learning, and kind of the thought processes that a lot of medical students go through. Because in reality, people that don't get the privilege that we've had to do medical school, it's kind of a black box and they don't really know how it works. So that's why we wanted to do this.
Basically, in a non-cliche way, we're trying to bridge the gap between healthcare and the public.
And also, I'd like to remind you about our email address so you can get back to us with some feedback, or we might want to make a comment on the topics that we discuss. So it's hoth@unbc.ca.
Okay, and so we'll be back next week with our new topic, which is going to be the cost of healthcare. Where does our money go?
Thank you very much for listening to Health on the Hill, our inaugural show. Hopefully you enjoyed it, and we'll see you next week.